Hello and welcome to episode 71 of the Books by Old Dead Guys podcast. I'm Scott.
And I'm David.
And we are walking through Thomas Brooks' Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. David, what have we covered so far?
Oh man, so we covered a lot. We're 100 pages in. We just finished the second section, so the second big section in the book where he talks about different devices to draw the soul to sin. So he went through 12 individual devices that the evil one uses to draw Christians into sin.
Yep.
So we walked through each of those. We looked at the various remedies that Brooks lists for those. But today, we're starting a new section.
A whole new section? So, section 3. That means 1 and 2 are done. And so whenever we read the Puritans, one of the things we have to be aware of is the Puritans have very descriptive titles, both for their books and for their chapters. And so section 3, the chapter title is Satan's Devices to Keep Souls from Holy Duties, to Hinder Souls in Holy Services, and to Keep Them Off from Religious Performances. David, I think you summarized this perfectly just a few minutes ago. What did you say this was?
This was keeping Christians from the things they should be doing.
There you go. That's it. Now, why he couldn't have said that?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Summarizing wasn't their jam.
That's not their strong suit. That's why this podcast exists.
Yes.
So that is what we're after now. How does the enemy keep us from doing the things we ought to do? So we just finished the section then that is, how does the enemy get us to do the things we shouldn't do? Mm-hmm. Now we're in the section of, how does the enemy keep us from doing the things we should? Mm-hmm. There you go. Okay, so let's see what Brooks says. The second thing to be shown is the several devices that Satan hath as to draw souls to sin, so to keep souls from holy duties, to hinder souls in holy services, and to keep them off from religious performances. He references Zechariah 3:1, and he showed me Joshua, the high priest, standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. So what we just said,
yeah.
Basically. So he's here's the
introducing the chapter.
Yes. So here's the first device. Device number one, by presenting the world in such a dress and in such a garb to the soul as to ensnare the soul and win upon the affection of the soul. He represents the world to them in its beauty and bravery, which proves a bewitching sight to a world of men. It is true, this took not Christ, because Satan could find no matter in him for his temptation to work upon, so that he can no sooner cast out his golden bait, but we are ready to play with it and to nibble at it. He can no sooner throw out his golden ball, but men are apt to run after it, though they lose God and their souls in the pursuit. Ah, how many professors in these days have for a time followed hard after God, Christ, and ordinances, till the devil hath set before them the world in all its beauty and bravery, which hath so bewitched their souls that they have grown to have low thoughts of holy things, and then to be cold in their affections to holy things, and then to slight them, and at last, with the young man in the gospel, to turn their backs upon them all the time. The thoughts, the spirits, the hearts, the souls, the duties, the services that the inordinate love of this wicked world doth eat up and destroy, and hath ate up and destroyed. Where 1,000 are destroyed by the world's frowns, 10,000 are destroyed by the world's smiles. The world, siren-like, sings us and sinks us. It kisses us. It betrays us like Judas. It kisses us and smites us under the fifth rib like Joab. The honors, splendor, and all the glory of this world are but sweet poisons that will much endanger us if they do not eternally destroy us. Ah, the multitude of souls that have surfeited of these sweet baits and died forever.
Mm. So how does he keep us from doing the things we ought to do? He makes the world look more fun.
Mm-hmm.
He makes the world look more beautiful, more just more fun.
Yeah, that's it.
He puts out his bait, and we are, so many of us are just apt to go and play in the world instead of doing the things that we ought to do, the things the Lord has called us to do.
Yeah, well, and you think about, more fun can be expanded to more restful, more fulfilling.
Yes,
you
more
know,
comfortable.
So in our culture, not uncommon to talk to the unchurched man, and sometimes, unfortunately, the church man. When you talk to him about being in church on Sunday morning, and his response is, I can have church in my tree stand.
Mm.
I mean, Brooks, it's literally, he just read your mail. I mean, yeah. What? Because
the tree stand is more appealing.
It's more fun.
Yeah.
Right. It is. And even though, and here's the thing, I'm not arguing that being in nature is not a great thing, man. It is.
Yeah.
There are great aspects to just enjoying God's creation in nature, but they are never a replacement for the gathering of God's people. And when we make them a replacement for gathering with God's people, well, we have now taken part in a device to keep the soul from holy duties.
Yes.
To hinder souls from holy services and to keep us off from religious performances. And we did so because the world was presented in such a way as to win the affection of the soul. I mean, it's like automatic. You can see it happening so much.
Yes.
Right? That at the end of the day, the greatest temptation, I think, and as pastors, we have a front row view to this, right? There's a particular temptation to quit, for instance, church things, mm-hmm. because there are no worldly consequences to quitting the church things, yep. right? So I'm really tired at work, so I'm not going to serve in the church. Because work takes all my energy and I can't quit work because if I quit work, I can't eat.
Yeah.
And because our worldly needs come first. And so it's not even, it can be fun. And I bet I'll hear stuff like this. It can be fun. It can also, we can really trick ourselves into thinking, I can't do this because I'm so busy doing these things. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Okay. All right. I can preach a sermon, but I'm not going to. We're going to do remedy one. How do we remedy this, David? Let's see what he says. Mm. The first remedy against this device of Satan is to dwell upon the impotency and weakness of all these things here below. They are not able to secure you from the least evil. They are not able to procure you the least desirable good. The crown of gold cannot cure the headache, nor the velvet slipper ease the gout, nor the jewel about the neck take away the pain of the teeth. The frogs of Egypt entered into the rich men's houses of Egypt as well as the poor. Our daily experience doth evidence this, that all the honors and riches that men enjoy cannot free them from the colic, the fever, or lesser diseases. Nay, that which may seem most strange is that a great deal of wealth cannot keep men from falling into extreme poverty. Mm. You shall find 70 kings with their fingers and toes cut off, glad like whelps, to lick up crumbs under another king's table. And shortly after, the same king that brought them to this penury is reduced to the same poverty and misery. Why then should that be a bar to keep thee out of heaven, that thou cannot give thee at the least ease on earth? Mm. Man, that's pretty good.
So the first remedy is to consider how the things of this world are simply not able to satisfy and keep us safe.
No.
They are not able to satisfy the desires of our souls, and they are not able to protect us from the terrible things that come upon us.
Right.
That there is no amount of money, no amount of health insurance, no amount of health care that can keep you from getting sick.
Right.
You are part of a fallen world. You will suffer disease.
Yep.
The time will come, right? And no amount of jogging equipment or exercise bikes will save you.
Nope, that is correct.
And in the same manner, he says flat out, no, even a great deal of wealth will not keep you from falling into extreme poverty.
Mm-hmm.
That bankruptcy comes upon those who are heads of business as well as those who are, you know, out on the streets.
Yep. Yep. Physical things cannot produce eternal things.
No.
It's just not possible.
No.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. All right, so there's remedy one. Remedy two. Second remedy against this device of Satan is to dwell upon the vanity of them as well as upon the impotency of all worldly good. This is the sum of Solomon's sermon. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. This our first parents found, and therefore named their second son Abel, or vanity. Solomon, that had tried these things and could best tell the vanity of them, he preacheth this sermon over and over again. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It is sad to think how many thousands there be that can say with the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Nay, swear it. And yet follow after these things as if there were no other glory nor felicity, but what is to be found in these things they call vanity. Such men will sell Christ, heaven, and their souls for a trifle that call these things vanity, but do not cordially believe them to be vanity, but set their hearts upon them as if they were their crown, the top of their royalty and glory. Oh, let your souls dwell upon the vanity of all things here below, till your hearts be so thoroughly convinced and persuaded of the vanity of them as to trample upon them and make them a footstool for Christ to get up and ride in a holy triumph in your hearts. Chrysostom once said that if he were the fittest in the world to preach a sermon to the whole world, gathered together in one congregation, and had some high mountain form his pulpit from whence he might have a prospect of all the world in his view, and were furnished with a voice of brass, a voice as loud as the trumpets of the archangel, that all the world might hear him, he would choose to preach upon no other text than in the Psalms, O mortal men, how long will ye love vanity and follow after leasing? Tell me, you say that all things under the sun are vanity. If you really do believe what you say, why do you spend more thoughts and time on the world than you do on Christ, heaven, and your immortal souls? Why do you then neglect your duty toward God to get the world? Why do you then so eagerly pursue after the world and are so cold in your pursuing after God, Christ, and holiness? Why then are your hearts so exceedingly raised when the world comes in and smiles upon you, and so much dejected and cast down when the world frowns upon you and with Jonah's gourd withers before you?
So the second device is to consider how the things of this world are, as the scriptures call them,
vanity. Yeah.
Vanity.
Empty. Meaningless.
Yes.
External beauty, but devoid of any internal consequence. Yeah, it's
passing
good.
Passing like a vapor.
Man, yeah, and that's the world. The world is vanity.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I mean the style, right? You just think about fashion, and then think about Solomon, right? So I'm no fashion expert. I don't know if you knew this, David. But I'm not. I'm not.
I'm surprised, Scott.
I know. It comes as a shock.
I really expected.
No one consults me about what the latest trends in fashion
really?
Are. Yes, I'm stuck.
You don't have people lining up by your door?
I don't. At least not this week. Now, after this podcast, who knows?
Who knows?
But, you know, people may be asking me all kinds of fashion advice. But, you know, look at how quickly things change in that world, right? Real, meaningful, lasting things can't change that quickly because they're eternal.
Yes.
And they don't change at all. Right. And so you think of, you know, what the latest trend is in fashion, or, you know, man, Instagram and other social media outlets have exacerbated this. I mean, Things change so quickly that you can't just to try to keep up is utterly exhausting.
Yes.
Like, I don't know the pressure that young people must feel now has got to be ramped up infinitely higher than it was even when we were teenagers, because everything is so. It all moves so fast, and the latent pressure to keep up with the people around you, that's as old as sin, right? Mm-hmm. But now it happens so quickly, and so what are we doing? How do we speak into the culture with this? And we do that by talking about eternal things, by focusing on eternal truth, and by saying, man, this whole world is vanity. Everything's going away.
Yes.
But God's word stands forever.
Yes.
And that's what Brooks is saying, is to get your perspective right, right? The thing that's unchanging is his word, his law, his character.
Yes.
He changeth not, so says the scriptures, right? Like this is who he is, and it always will be. And because of that, when we focus on him, well, then we can see the things for what they are. But if we focus on him, then we will do those, as he calls them, holy duties.
Yes.
We will participate in those things that are good for our souls.
Yes.
You know, what's really even more sad, and I'm going to chase a whole different rabbit, is to see the church do this.
Yes.
Right? When the church is built on vanity, that's even more nefarious. Mm-hmm. You know, when the whole reason that people come to church is to get this great show, or to have these lights and bells and whistles, you know, the work that I do for the association, you know, the question that almost immediately gets asked to me when you go into a church that's declining is, what do we need to do in order to attract young people? It's a horrible question. It's a desperate question. I understand why they're asking it. It's not that they're asking the question that's bad. It's the perception of, if we can get them to chase after vanity, then they'll come to our church. Right. What we're trying to do then. And so then you'll see it. I've seen it. Churches that'll frantically buy, I don't know, a drum set or a, you know,
light. So you'll see these old guys in skinny jeans, which is an abomination. Just shouldn't happen. and in all those, you know, and what are they doing? Ultimately, you're chasing after the culture, right? You're trying to attract people by showing them that you look like the culture, which is, as we just read,
vanity.
Man, preach the word.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And Brooks's question to those reading the book is, if you really believe what the scripture says, that this world is full of vanity, that it is meaningless, that it is passing away like a vapor, then how can you chase after it and leave behind, leave undone the things that are of eternal value? Mm. How?
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I've got a buddy of mine that asks the question, how we can tell, even thinking about our prayer lives, what we're praying for. Are we really praying for things that aren't vanity? Or are we praying for vanity? He'll say, if God answered the last 100 things that you prayed for, just boom, today, how many of those things would involve the advancement of God's kingdom? Mm. And how many of them would involve the advancement of your kingdom?
It's a good question.
It's a great question, because it reveals to us that even in the Christian life, we can be prone to vanity, which is why Ecclesiastes matters so much. What do you think? One more?
How long? I think the next one's short.
Yeah. Let's get remedy three done. Okay, remedy three. The third remedy against this device of Satan is to dwell much upon the uncertainty, the mutability, and inconsistency of all things under the sun. Man himself is but the dream of a dream, but the generation of a fancy, but an empty vanity, but the curious picture of nothing, a poor, feeble, dying flash. All temporals are as transitory as a hasty, headlong current, a shadow, a ship, a bird, an arrow, a post that passeth by. Why shouldst thou set thine eyes upon that which is not, saith Solomon? And saith the apostle, the fashion of this world passeth away, in 1 Corinthians 7:31. Heaven only hath a foundation, earth hath none, but it is hanged upon nothing, as Job speaks in Job 26:7. The apostle willed Timothy to charge rich men that they be not high-minded, nor put their trust in uncertain riches, 1 Timothy 6:17. They are like bad servants whose shoes are made of running leather, and will never tarry long with one master. As a bird hoppeth from tree to tree, so do the honors and riches of this world from man to man. Let Job and Nebuchadnezzar testify this truth, who fell from great wealth to great want. No man can promise himself to be wealthy till night. One storm at sea, one coal of fire, one false friend, one unadvised word, one false witness may make thee a beggar and a prisoner all at once. All the riches and glory of this world is but a smoke and chaff that vanisheth, as a dream and vision in the night that tarrieth not. As if a hungry man dreameth, and like a thirsty man which thinketh he drinketh, and behold, when he is wakened, his soul is faint, said the prophet Isaiah 29:8. Where is the glory of Solomon, the sumptuous buildings of Nebuchadnezzar, the 900 chariots of Sisera, the power of Alexander, the authority of Augustus, that commanded the whole world to be taxed? These that have been the most glorious, in what men generally account glorious and excellent, have had inglorious ends, as Samson for strength, Absalom for favor, Ahithophel for policy, Haman for favor, Asahel for swiftness, Alexander for great conquest, and yet after 12 years, poisoned. The same you may see in the four mighty kingdoms, the Chaldeans, the Persians, the Grecians, and the Romans. How soon were they gone and forgotten? Now rich, now poor, now full, now empty, now in favor, anon out of favor, now honorable, now despised, now health, now sickness, now strength, now weakness.
So his point here in this remedy that life, that a man's life itself on this earth is fleeting, that it is here today, gone tomorrow.
Yep.
Like a brief sigh is our life in this world.
So true.
Yeah. And when you consider, and he brings it up, all of these kingdoms that have come up in the past that are now have been wiped out, have been gone and all but forgotten.
Yep.
You know, you think about all of the time and efforts that were spent building up all these grand things in the moment, and yet
they're gone.
There's little to no evidence of them.
We now call them ruins.
Yes, we now call them ruins.
Which is a fascinating, isn't that a fascinating word? I don't know if I've ever considered that.
Ruins.
We consider the leftovers of these great cultures
ruins, which is exactly what spending our time focusing on this world will lead us to, is ruin. Man, this is a helpful chapter.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like I've said that about everyone, but helpful.
Well, we'll continue in it next time. So join us again for more remedies to this particular device of Satan. And if you know someone who you think could benefit from this podcast, just go ahead and share this podcast with them. We'd love to see our listenership grow as more people who could benefit from it listen to it. And we hope that you'll share it on social media or whatever podcasting app you particularly use or navigate towards. And we'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Goodbye.